The Guardian.
Hello, I'm Michael White, and this is Conference Daily. Yes, we're back. The noise you can hear in the background, if you strain your ears, is the big Ferris wheel that they've built on the Albert Dock in Liverpool, where the Lib Dems are meeting this week in the shiny new Echo Arena. That's named after the Liverpool Echo, the local paper. And so is the Ferris wheel. This has got an Echo logo all over it, next to Jury's Inn. It's all very smart and posh down here. And, of course, that's entirely appropriate to the smartened-up, poshed-up Liberal Democrats, who are for the first time in 65 years in government, and really for the first time in 90 years in proper government. This is the business. They just had a token place in Churchill's wartime cabinet. This time last year, Nick Clegg was telling his party they could pinch votes for the Conservative. This year, they're in government. And Nick Clegg says, no long-term coalition, no coupon like Lloyd George. We're an independent party. This is a short-term solution. It's the right action for the right moment, which is now. Dissent's been plain to see today and yesterday at the conference when they got started, when the party leadership was defeated this morning over the coalition's most radical policies, one of them, expanding the school academies and free schools. More of that later. Good articulate debate, though. We'll also hear from the Guardian Fringe debate, where Chris Hughne, who's climate change and energy secretary in the Cameron cabinet, it still surprises me to say it, he hinted at a change of tack on cuts depending on economic conditions. But let's begin with the day's big event, Nick Clegg's speech, the toughest leader's speech, so some claim, well, they would in Liverpool, wouldn't they, of the conference season. And it's a measure of just how far he's come that he gave this speech early in the week, Monday afternoon, so he can jet off to New York to discuss global poverty in his capacity, I suppose you could say, as the new John Prescott. He told the Pact Hall that the pact with the Tories, one term only, and they should hold their nerve. Here he is in his peroration.
The years ahead will not be easy, but they will make the difference our country needs. Stick with us while we rebuild the economy. Stick with us while we restore our civil liberties, protect our environment, nurture our children, and repair our broken politics. Stick with us, and together we will change Britain for good. Thank you.
Of course, another novelty for the Lib Dems, heavens above, they're able to make ministerial announcements, the sort of thing every governing party does, give the party faithful a reward for all their hard work on wet winter evenings knocking on doors by telling them something they want to hear, as well as the bits they don't. And here it is, rather a technical point, but an important one. Councils are going to be back in the money market, able to borrow against their assets and against their business rate in the financial markets. Well, of course, we need to boost spending, public and private, and both in a recession, so it's good stuff.
And I can announce today that we'll be giving local authorities the freedom to borrow against those extra business rates to help pay for additional new developments. Now, this may not... This may not make the sort of pulses race in the country at large. Does here, of course.
And finally, a bit of basic economics from Deputy Prime Minister Clegg. He's quite earnest, and here he is being earnest.
Our council leaders know the poorest are the ones that suffer when the finances get out of control and money has to be spent on debts. They know there is nothing fair about denying you have a problem and simply leaving it for the next generation to clear it up. Would you ask your children to pay your credit card bill? I've heard some people say, no, I think is the answer.
Well, there it was, 37 minutes, quite a short speech. How was it received? Last week, an opinion poll suggested that Nick Clegg is more popular among Tory voters than with Lib Dems. That figures, and some of the Tory commentators are very helpfully saying how impressive he is. That's really useful for Nick. Let's hear from some of the delegates as they stream out of the hall.
Well, he's emphasising the things that we have already achieved in such a short time.
What in particular, when you heard him say that, what was the one you liked most?
The identity cards was one, pupil premium was another.
Has he got the sort of I'm trying to avoid using the word charisma, but as a speaker, does he make you smile? Does he inspire you? What's he got that Charlie Kennedy didn't have, or the other way around?
I think he has a dignity and conviction. Perhaps not quite the humour of Vince.
That's true. No, he wasn't strong on humour, was he? Thank you very much.
Yes, but it is a serious business.
It was an excellent speech. It was really first class. And I think it reflects the mood of the conference, which is very, very positive, very confident. I think the media reports that there's a lot of tension inside Liberal Democrats just isn't the case.
Now, here's another cheerful-looking delegate. What have you got to look cheerful about after all that?
I'm cheerful about the state of the party. As Nick said, going into coalition has lost our soul. We're not getting everything we want out of the coalition, but we are in government. We've got the ability to deliver a lot of what we believe in. I'm very cheerful about the fact that Nick is Deputy Prime Minister and doing an excellent job.
We've been talking here to Sarah Ludford, MEP. How many leader speeches do you reckon you've seen, or how many leaders, to put it more tactfully?
Quite a few. I joined the party in 1981, so you can do the math, as they say. So nearly three decades.
What are the distinctive characteristics of a Clegg speech? He's quite serious, isn't he?
Yes, he is actually. I think in the best possible way, he's got a lot of bottom. He's very solid, Nick. I mean, I worked with him, of course, in European Parliament for 5 years, and I grew to appreciate him very much then. In fact, I sometimes tell the anecdote that Paddy Ashdown, I was with Paddy Ashdown on a Eurostar. I think it was just after we got elected to the European Parliament in 1999, and Paddy told me that Nick Clegg was a future leader of the party. And that was in about 1999.
Did Paddy spot that he was a future Deputy Prime Minister?
He didn't actually add that to the remark, but...
We wouldn't have believed him anyway, would we?
Hope springs.
Thank you very much. Right, who have we got here? Another member of the House of Lords, Paul Tyler, former MP for Bodmin in Cornwall, now Lord Tyler. Let's see what he thinks about it.
Politics is day by day, hour by hour. Even you do a blog every few minutes.
Every 10 minutes, yes.
And I think it's very difficult to get people to raise their sights to think, where are we going to be in 5 years' time? I think he did do that very effectively.
His difficulty is that the short term is uncomfortable.
It's bloody uncomfortable, and we know it's bloody uncomfortable. There are many people in this room who will be responsible for taking very difficult decisions over the next few months, but they've got to keep clear in their minds, where are we trying to get to?
Was there anything there that surprised you?
I'm surprised there's any money to do some of the things we're clearly going to be able to do with the decisions that he was taking. I mean, the announcement about local authorities being able to borrow money, which sounds incredibly absurdly technical, is actually of critical importance to their freedom of manoeuvre. That was announced today.
Yes.
Getting ministerial announcements from a Liberal or Liberal Democrat platform is not something I've ever experienced before.
Not something either of us have experienced before. Thank you. Well, I'm joined now by John Harris, one of the Guardian's commentating team. John, what do you think?
I don't want much part of the substance of it in terms of agreeing with any of it, but I thought as 37 minutes of rhetoric, large swathes of it were very, very effective indeed. Crafty probably is a word I'd use for it.
Why a horrid word like crafty about the Lib Dems?
Because there are lots of his arguments which one can very easily pick apart, but that doesn't mean that out there in the real world, they won't be effective. So, of course, anyone who clings to a sort of Keynesian conception of economics knows that analogies with the kitchen table and so on are pretty specious. And I find this argument about the generational justice of savage cuts to protect our children from awful debt, similarly, I find some of that quite specious. But that doesn't mean that if you frame it in the correct way, it won't sound convincing. And he knows that, and he delivered that stuff really, really well.
Was there any aspect of his argument which swayed your hard heart?
I like the fact that it sounds limited, but there is some move on liberating councils to raise their own finance. That's what...
This is where he says local government can raise money, borrow money against
business rates.
Yeah, with the council as a surety.
I mean, bond-raising powers for local government, which is something
constrained
slightly
for years,
different
they? Decades.
There. Yeah,
that's to Mrs. Thatcher.
In the more sort of hard-bitten anarchy bits of the centre-left, that is a policy demand which has become stronger and stronger in about the last 2 or 3 years. And, of course, it's part of the clever cross-dressing, which is... points up certain parts of this coalition that he has now embraced it, and it's a good thing, whichever way you look at it.
I think, John, that he's finally talked you around. Let's stop that on a positive note. Earlier in the day, we had one of those major policy flashpoints, the one I mentioned a moment ago. The party was asked to debate a motion calling for a boycott of these new free schools, independent from local authorities. It's a Swedish idea, so those Tory columnists got excited about last year. Some think it's socially divisive and will end up giving more public assets, taxpayers' money, to the sharp-elbowed middle class as usual. Sarah Tether, the diminutive schools minister, spoke in favour of the school setup. She has to. She's part of it. It's part of the coalition agreement. Here she is.
I ask you not to pass the motion as drafted, because regardless of the good intentions of the proposers, lines 16 and 17 are fundamentally illiberal. Councils have to be able to use every tool that is available to them to improve life chances for their children. If the best way to solve a local problem is to work with the government of the day, this conference should not stand in their way. Please don't vote for a boycott. Don't tie our council's hands. Please vote down the motion. Thank you.
But former MP Evan Harris, who lost his Oxford West seat, spelled out his opposition to rather louder applause.
What we do need to do is recognise that Liberal Democrats are effective local campaigners. We're entitled to urge our party to call on people to implement Liberal Democrat policy. We should stick at local level to Liberal Democrat policy, where we are fighting the Tories up and down the country. We must be free to fight the Tories up and down the country at local level. I urge you to support this motion and reject Amendment 2.
So, after the debate, I stopped a few delegates swarming out of the Echo Arena looking for lunch, asked them why they'd voted and what they thought about it all. Did it matter?
I thought it was a very good debate, very positive. Good that we can debate issues at our conference still with no fear of whether it goes exactly along with the coalition policy or not. So that's good.
Didn't quite get what they wanted, did they?
No, they didn't, but that's the joy of being a Liberal Democrat rather than one of the other parties, that you know, we can debate these things.
You don't think that would have happened with the Tories or the Labour Party?
I think it's very unlikely. I think you probably do too.
I might do that. Yes, it's possible. Yes, I'll give you that point. Now, what about Sarah Tether? Does that cause difficulty for her?
It doesn't cause any difficulty for her. She stood up, she made a good speech, she made her point. There's huge support for the pupil premium, which she's heading up in government. And the nature of the Lib Dems is that we can disagree in a conference debate like this. The party will want to assert itself. It doesn't mean we think any less of the people that are representing us in government.
Excuse me, madam. The other debate starting. Can we ask you what you thought of that debate? We're from the Guardian podcast.
I think it was the right result. I voted for the motion, so I was pleased that it was carried so decisively. It's an issue that is of importance, of course, to absolutely everybody, isn't it? Education affects us all. Even if we don't have children, we've got family members with children. Yep. So it's absolutely fundamental, and it's really important that we have equality of provision.
Isn't embarrassment or awkward for Sarah Tether, or whether it's just part of the cut and thrust of politics and coalition life and we better get used to it?
I think it's the latter. I hope it won't be an embarrassment for Sarah. I didn't take it at all as any kind of an attack on her work and her leadership. And in fact, a number of the speakers went out of their way to compliment her and thank her for her work.
Well, I'm joined now by The Guardian's new education editor, Jeevan Vasagar, for his take on it.
Well, I was struck by the level of opposition amongst the delegates to free schools and academies. This is obviously a sort of central policy of the coalition, but it's one that the rank and file here don't seem happy with at all. Perhaps it's not surprising, given the strength of kind of local authority support amongst the Lib Dems and given how many teachers and people interested in education there seem to be here.
Teachers and councillors and some parents with strong views, and not a particularly typical audience, but there was a very vivid description from a woman from, I think, Kirklees in Yorkshire, where she said, we have good local schools, 100 years old, there's an application for a free school. They can't control their admissions policy, but they can control their catchment area, and this has been drawn in a way to exclude poor neighbourhoods. I hadn't realised it was quite as blatant as that.
That is very interesting. They can control their catchment areas. They can sort of draw their own lines on this. It is an interesting question. I mean, it depends to some extent. The free schools would argue they're smaller schools. They draw a kind of particular catchment area in a particular area. And they could say they don't intend to draw this on along class lines. It just happens to be where they're living. But they can draw it so it marks out a particular kind of leafy affluent area.
Jeevan Vasagar there. Well, the issue that lurks beneath every discussion at this conference is measures taken to deal with the deficit. Lib Dem ministers are doing all they can to prevent talk of splits with their Conservative partners. But at the Guardian's debate this afternoon, did Chris Huhne suggest that, well, the cuts may be rethought if the growth situation doesn't improve, fearful of this double-dip recession? You decide, dear listener.
But I have to say to you, you know, I spent 10 years as writing about economics for The Guardian. I spent an awful lot of my career writing about economics, about chancellors, about finance ministers. I have never known, in the entire period I've been writing about economics, one red book the same as the next. And any chancellor has to take account of circumstances, has to reassess. If you're setting out to sail from here to Birkenhead and the wind changes, you're going to have to go about and take a new tack to get to your objective. The objective will stay the same, but you have to make sure that you get there in a way that delivers both the deficit reduction that we have to deliver and growth, because you don't get the deficit reduction unless you get growth. Growth is necessary to get the tax revenue up, and it's necessary to get the benefit payments down as unemployment falls.
I think Chris has just said something very, very significant, actually, which you're not supposed to say, I thought, at fringe meetings of this kind, which is that I take him to say that if growth is in fact low, then it may be that the cuts will be scaled back.
That's I think I gave you a nautical image.
Which is an immensely significant statement. All I can say is, I hope it's correct, because if growth is very low, and we are faced with the threat of double dip or actual long-term low growth, then that is the situation we appear to be facing. I very much hope that some of the decisions that have been taken so far are retaken.
That was clever Chris Huhne and his clever Labour counterpart, Andrew Lauder-Donis, who is now head of the Institute for Government in Whitehall. Very grand sort of non-party think tank. Right, that's the end of what may be the most important day of the conference, One Revolt, One Leader's speech. It's much sunnier here in Liverpool than it was yesterday when it was absolutely chucking it down. They were cheerful inside the hall and cold and wet outside it. There's a whole 2.5 days of fringe meetings and plotting and no doubt recriminations, but also an awful lot of cheerfulness. These people are here. A year ago, they didn't expect to be coming back to their party conference in government. Some of them are a bit cross, some of them are a bit suspicious, but most of them are pretty pleased with themselves, and it's not hard to see why. This is Mike White. The producer was Phil Maynard. Hope you'll join us again tomorrow.